For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Got Crosby right in front of the net. Good block shot by Greenway there as he dropped down to get a piece of that one. Carlson, far post, scores. Sidney Crosby. Textbook Penguins power play goal, and they win it in overtime, 6-5.
Good morning, everybody. Dan Dunleavy, Rob Ray on the call last night. There is the overtime winner as Pittsburgh takes down the Sabres 6-5. Very exciting game if you had zero rooting interest in it. We're going to get to football today. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
To be fair, it was exciting. Like,
I was in hell for half that game.
Okay, yeah. The second period was terrible.
The second period was awful, and they chased the entire third period. And then when they took the lead,
right, that part was really
they
exciting.
Fell apart. They apart. The moment they went up 5-4, they fell apart.
But the first period, like, I turned on that game and then went into my kitchen. Like, I was, like, doing some dishes or something. And I heard the announcers, like, kind of, like, get loud. And, of course, it's in Pittsburgh. So if the Sabres scored, I wasn't going to hear a goal horn or anything. And I heard them, like yelling. And be like, oh my God, what happened? Like they literally were like, what? How did that goal go in? And I was like, what? And I came out and I was like, oh my God, Tage, sweet.
Sweet, that's awesome.
And then I went back in the kitchen to finish the dishes and then they scored again. And it's like, wait a minute, what's happening? Like, where did this team come from? And it was great. Like that, and of course they get scored on a few minutes later, but then they scored again and it's 3-1. And it's like, okay, this was the problem that you had last year. You were going into games, starting off hot, and then flaming out and falling apart. And by the end of the first period, they were that's the story of last season. But this last night's game, it was, all right, you played a great first period. Now go out and do the second, and boom, there it is. That's where you fall apart, the second period.
Yep.
But then you make up for it a little bit. You come back in the third. You actually take the lead a minute apart from two goals.
40 seconds. You scored, like, two goals in 40 seconds.
That was perfect. It was great. All you had to do was hold on.
They looked...
It was incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, they looked both equally impressive and the exact bad team you think they are. Josh, they're 0 for 15 on power plays.
That is
And not terrible. Even necessarily to the fact of they're 0-15, they're an active detriment to their team when they go on a power play. It is 2 minutes where you get no scoring chances. Mm-hmm. It's 2 minutes where the opposing team is more threatening, and they're a man down.
Yeah.
They are horrendous on the special team. Their penalty kill, I like for the most part.
I was going to say, coincidentally, their penalty kill actually is better than the power play.
Last night they gave up two goals. Last night they gave up two goals, but for the most part, I really like their penalty kill.
Pittsburgh's always had a great power play system, partially because of the fact that Sidney Crosby.
Really, that's last year.
Yeah, and just because Sidney Crosby is there pretty much. But like, I look at everything that they had going into this. You know, talking about the power play and how it's revamped and changed and everything. And a part of me looking at the season as a whole looks at that shortened training camp and the trip to Europe as, you know what, they had to get home, they got their legs under them now, and they're doing okay. Because for the most part, they are. And I was trying to think maybe that's the same thing that has to do with the power play. Maybe it was just, you know, hey, they just got to get the rust off. They had that weird training camp and the weird trip to Europe. They'll get there. But they're not.
Yeah, they're not.
It's not getting any better. It's getting worse.
Paul, we spoke with Paul Hamilton yesterday and, like, you know, joking, but kind of right. Well, at least they're actually able to get into the opposing team's zone.
Right.
Which was true.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah, because last year that was just impossible. It was, if you asked, would you rather skate around the neutral zone or skate it into the opposing end? And they would skate it around the neutral zone. And it's just, I don't really know what they can do to fix that because it's mind-boggling. I don't understand what happened to any sort of power play system they had.
I don't think they had one. I think that's a big part of it. I don't think they had one. I think their power play system from 2 years ago was
get Tage the
puck.
No
one knows who Tage Thompson is.
Mm-hmm. And you can still use Tage as that one-time wonder. Just don't make it the focal point of your power play, but also don't get rid of it entirely.
But it's just they look so discombobulated. The moment they're up a man, they look discombobulated. They mm-hmm. don't know what to do. They don't know where they're going. Paul brought up yesterday, too, you're not getting anything out of the guys in the blue line with Dahlin or Power as your quarterbacks of the power play. They're not shooting the puck. Yeah. So there's no fear there. All of the fear is still Tage Thompson or, you know, Paterka if he gets put on the power play more often. I think he should. You're also not getting anything out of Dylan Cousins and Jack Quinn. If anything, you're getting negatives. I think they're both, from yesterday, like -3, key turnovers, also ruining power plays by just not knowing when to pass it, taking it across the blue line. It's just, they look at times completely lost. And it's when they have a man advantage, and that is the most stunning part. I'm not asking you to have a top five power play. That's, I think now at this point, being greedy.
Yeah.
Just can you get just in the be top middle 20? Of the pack? Yeah.
Top 20 maybe? First score a goal.
Just be yeah.
Well, that would be the key.
But that's my thing. I think, you know, we're what, through 5 games?
Yes.
I'm at a point now, I mean, you're 0 for 15. I'm wondering just how few power play goals you're going to score. Mm-hmm. How bad is this going to get? You only had one shot at last night, so, you know, fair. I mean, if you had 5 shots like Pittsburgh, maybe we're singing a different tune here. Probably not. But you're going up against Columbus tonight, and I saw the moral victories for tonight from Jeremy. Score power play goal.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I will go streaking if that happens. Honestly, I've gotten to that point. They are a detriment to themselves when they get a – they should decline them. Change the rules. They should decline them.
Quinn, Cousins, and Benson were all -2 last night.
Benson, I'm a big fan of. That
I don't think that's any, you know – indicator of and plus minus.
I don't even want to say I'm a fan because I'm worried that I'm going to build him up like I did Dylan Cousins. He's going to take one injury and man, like what has happened to Cousins?
Right.
He's like two years ago. There was a belief that like man, like that's a core foundational member of a team that is ascending. You would be lucky to get anything from a trade from him.
He appeared
the contract
to
is
be,
bad and he himself is a bad player.
He appeared to be this great defensive forward that can maybe get you. You know, 50 points, mm-hmm. 60 points, but he's
25 plus.
But he's going to make up for it in his defensive end. He's not going to get as much points as like Tage Thompson would, but he's going to make up for it in his defensive end. But that has completely disappeared. He was part of the reason why they got scored on once last night.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lazy pass along the half wall that leads to, I think, the shorthanded goal on the power play, no less. So that's the other thing that's just ridiculous about it. And I hate saying all this negative stuff because it was a good game. They played well for all of the first and most of the third. Like, I don't think they had that bad of a third period. They scored 2 goals in 40 seconds. They came back after giving up 3 unanswered goals, which usually this team in the past has given up 2 or even just 1 goal and is just, oh, well, I don't know what to do. I guess we're just going to turtle up and try again next game. This time, you can see them actually come out of their shell and no, you know what? We're going to go out there and we're going to tie this game. And then you know what? We're going to take the lead off the faceoff on the next play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that was great to see. But leading up to that third period, it was terrible. That second period was abysmal.
Oh, horrendous.
You had no puck control. You had no semblance of just any type of, you know, defensive zone setup. Partially because there was like 10 penalties in the second period mm-hmm. by both teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, oh, it's the refs' fault or let's blame the refs. But at the same time, there were some very questionable calls.
That wasn't
great. Yeah,
it was not
game.
Great.
There was a clear...
Offside.
Yes, that one wasn't very clear, but it definitely was offside.
Mm-hmm.
But Thompson's penalty in overtime along that wall.
Yep.
That same thing happened in regulation 20 seconds before the Penguins tied it. But to the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
A Sabres player was tripped along the wall. It wasn't called. And like I said, 20 seconds later, boom, the puck's in the back of the net and it's a tie game. You're going to overtime. It's the inconsistencies in that department that are so hard to look at, especially in a game like this. But it was not because of those inconsistencies from the refs that mm-hmm. caused the Sabres to lose this game. Sure, it was a bit of it. but it was not the reason. The reason why is because they could not control the puck for almost half the game.
Yeah.
Because the third period didn't start off great. It finished fantastic. In terms of, you know,
but most of the third period, goals. You were just looking at it going, cool, they're gonna let this slip away. They let a two-goal lead slip away in the second, and now here we go.
Yeah, and like I said, I was happy with the third in terms of, you know, being able to just come back, mm-hmm. but it wasn't perfect. The first was perfect. You were up 3-1, you chased a goalie out after five shots, and unfortunately, the goalie that comes in just plays like Dominik Hasek for the rest of the game.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you shoot it straight at his chest every single time you have a breakaway.
That's fair. But he did have some pretty decent
he did, but like this is where Paul brings up, like, why do they just make average goaltenders look like Dominik Hasek every mm-hmm. now and then?
Yeah.
I don't know. Either hit the net
right.
for a start,
to be
or
fair,
when they do actually put a shot on net, it's straight at the goalie's chest. Josh, they had three breakaways last night, four. Well, three of the four straight at the goalie's
chest. There were four that they didn't score, and the fifth one was technically Peterka's second goal.
Oh, yeah.
There were four they didn't score on, but there were five total.
And he comes out at that angle. That's right.
So yep. I don't look at that goal as a breakaway personally, but it was kind of a breakaway.
But in terms of, like, you create a turnover, you're going down the ice.
Right.
Straight at the goalie's chest. He's not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
He just stands there. And because they've had a few of these chances this year, because their penalty kill has been at times very aggressive and very good. It's these lazy, I'm going to deke once and then just softly lay it over to their blocker side, and they're just going to like just leg sweep it.
Yep.
There's no real effort there.
You're not selling the goaltender.
No.
You're not doing a hard body feint.
It feels like if it's not Tage Thompson going down for a breakaway, they have no hope. Because at least for him, he fires it like at the speed of a rocket, so that even if it's at the goaltender's chest, he can't really see it.
Mm.
So he might move. It's just, what do they have? I mean, it got worse as the night went on, but TNT put up a stat too. They've had 97 missed shots. It's the most in the NHL.
Yeah. I mean, but
it was 4.5 games.
Yeah. I don't know how many actually missed the net last night. That's one thing I really wasn't paying attention to. Partially because they scored three goals in like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at, you know, all of the things around the NHL that are happening, like with certain teams. And there's teams that you expect to be bad that aren't bad. And there's teams you expect to be good that aren't good. Like the Avalanche started off, are 0-4 right now.
Mm.
Are they having these conversations? Probably not.
Are they 0-4? I thought they were 0-3. Did they?
No, they lost last night.
Oh, they lost.
They lost last night to Boston.
Yeah.
Are they having these conversations right now? Probably not, because they have Nathan McKinnon. They have Mikko Rantanen. They have Kale McCarr.
But I think it's another thing is you kind of know you're a good team. You're going to figure it out.
Right.
The Sabres, and this is why, it's game five. There should not be a rant. My voice should not be like this.
No.
It's more along the lines of you've earned, though, this vitriol. You've earned people's having zero faith in you after a single loss on a Wednesday night. And they scored five goals.
Yeah.
Now, on that point, though, you scored five full-strength goals. You need to win that game.
Is any of this panic... I don't know if I want to call it panic, but is any of this worry of season's over, it's done, we're going to be out by October, is that all kind of because the Bills were in the same situation like a week ago where they were on a two-game losing streak and the offense looked broken? Like, is it just kind of bleeding into each other a little bit?
I think for the Bills, though, I mean, we took some calls too, there was never like this real sense of panic of they're going to miss the playoffs. It was like, yeah, they're not as good as maybe we were hoping, but like they'll be fine.
Okay. I don't know. I had that thought this morning and I was just kind of like, you know, are we getting a little too overexcited about things in terms of, you know, it's the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that where we're going to with this? But I didn't think so, but I just wanted to see how you were feeling about that, because like I remember a couple of years ago when the Sabres were making their push, there was a lot of people, you know, tuning into the games and that hadn't tuned in for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was, you know, the Sabres lost two games in a row and it was like, oh, they're out of it. They're actually not. They're fine.
They're
25 more games to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered if it was partially that or if it was more so just because of, you know, how bleak it does look. But in reality, aside from the power play, the 5-on-5 numbers are fantastic.
They're top 10 in the league, I think, in most of the 5-on-5 categories.
In most of the offense.
Which is insane because they can't hit the net.
Right.
That's
which is crazy.
The insane part.
But where they're shooting from is what's giving them these good numbers in terms of the deep stats. But in terms of even just the normal, like looking at the NHL site stats, it's their top 15, top 10 sometimes in some of these offensive categories, and that's great. I want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you were hoping for. But you're still seeing there's problems with consistency. There's problems with the power play, obviously. But mm-hmm. the power play being bad should not kill your season. I understand that good teams have good power plays, but at the same time, if you can just the best power plays in the NHL are usually like 25%.
No, absolutely. You know, I think the difference is, though, and maybe this is just how I would define it, their power play is not bad. I do see it as a detriment.
Right.
It is something that is going to sink their season because when they go on the power play, they hurt themselves.
It kills momentum
for
two minutes.
For 2 minutes, through what, 15 tries they've had at this,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be aggressive here, but like it feels like they've had like 4 scoring chances through 15 power plays.
Yeah.
For
That's
2 minutes.
30 minutes of ice time.
Yeah. For 2 minutes, they are a non-offensive threat. And if anything, you're more scared. I mean, you saw it last night of them turning the puck over and giving up a shorthanded goal more than you're excited that we're on a power play. Here we go. Like, this is where we take advantage. Every time they've gotten a power play since like Prague, I'm like, oh, what's going to happen now? Because it's no different. Matt Ellis is not the power play coach anymore, and it feels like nothing has changed.
He's still
an assistant coach, but I think he's like up in the press
box.
He's
like in the video department kind of thing. But and honestly, too, you could have told me they could have got scored on like 4 or 5 times when on the power play. They only got 1 shorthanded goal against the team last night.
Yeah,
it feels like there should be like 7.
Because man, they turn the puck over a lot.
Yeah, and I wonder too. I wish there was a way to track this, but I don't think there is. How many times were they scored on within like 30 seconds after the power play ended?
That's something I know a lot of people have wanted to know, is either like how many goals are scored right after a power play ends, or for a shorthanded kind of. But I don't know if anyone actually does anything, because I don't know if anyone knows, like,
because that Kings game.
How long should the numbers be? Like 10 seconds? That kind of feels like a full.
Like think about that Kings game. Oh, actually, that was a power play goal for the Kings. Yeah. It wasn't a shorthanded goal, but still, there was a guy coming out of the box, and the Kings score right after. It's like, oh well, that's not a power play goal, or no, it was, because it was 5-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. Sorry.
Yep.
Invalidated point. But my my overall point is I. It's not that I don't want them to fix the power play, but it's like, you know,
I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do, because you just have to get it from the point of being, you're creating scoring chances against yourself, to, hey, we're getting 1 goal every 5 attempts, which isn't great, but hey, at least we're getting something.
It might also
just have to get to the floor. You're in the basement right now in terms of power play.
Yeah.
It's not even like passable as something that's like, you know, oh, it's got to get improved, but it's not killing us.
It might be something too. We'll get to your calls here in just 1 second. It might be something too, like the actual scoring for this season,
mm-hmm.
where eventually the goals are, they maybe just got to break the dam. Like, they went through 3 straight games of just 1 goal each. Yep. Now these last 2 games, 5-5.
Yep.
Like,
which is,
I mean, they're keep it going. They're now scoring.
You're playing Columbus against a backup goaltender.
Yeah. But like with that, I could at least look at the 5-on-5 and go, I mean, they're getting shots on. Like, okay, like they're not going in. I can't say that with the power play.
No, because they're not getting shots on net.
They're barely getting it into the opposing team's zones. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Mark's been on hold here for a little bit. Mark, you're on the show. What's going on, man?
Hey, fellas, thanks for having me on. Correct me if I'm wrong, that Matt Ellis was the power play kind of coach last year.
Yes.
Why in the world did we keep him on board? I mean, it's clearly not working. I mean, I don't mind moving on from an assistant coach. I mean, I think it's pretty ridiculous. But on the coaching, kind of pivoting towards football, I feel like it's been Josh Allen versus 2 opponents, not only the opposing defenses, but his own football coach. I mean, what was that at halftime? They get by with a win, and, you know, it kind of covers up. He kind of masks another Sean McDermott brutal, brutal, brutal decision. So that's my only concern going into the back half of the home stretch here. I'm going to have to listen. Thanks, boys.
Thanks for the call, Mark. On Ellis, me and Josh were saying, he's still an assistant coach. I'm almost positive he is not in charge of the power play anymore.
Yeah, no one really knows, like, what.
But it sounds like he's more like in the video.
None of us really know
scenes.
What he's doing. Obviously, the Sabres know what he's doing. But it was just more of a behind-the-scenes type of coaching role.
Yeah.
And it could be a behind-the-scenes part of the power play. We don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be. And if that's the case, that's a decision.
Yep. That's a decision.
Also, I looked at the wrong stat in terms of they have had 5 power play goals against.
Oh, they have. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was looking at shorthanded. I was thinking in like the other team. It was the goals they've given up while shorthanded.
Okay.
So they've given up 5 goals while on the power play.
And then on the McDermott point, real quick, we are going to transition for a little bit to football. Sal Capaccio is going to join the show here in about 10 minutes. I get it. I understand. McDermott, I said it on Monday night. I'm about done with the constant same mistakes over and over and over again. It did feel like, though, with the Hail Mary, they were playing it correct, and Rodgers checked into the Hail Mary call. I don't know how true that is. I saw it on Twitter real quick, and it was like, okay, that makes sense. I mean, he's been in this league forever, but I won't lie and say that I'm not like sick of the same mistakes over and over and over again. I will say, and this is kind of, you know, I want to reiterate the point, I think it is a tough topic to talk about because I don't find it realistic that they will move off of him. I think it would take a truly horrendous season to even have that conversation and potentially even seasons to see him get fired. I think he's built up that kind of goodwill with ownership. I'd even, you know, to his defense, he's winning playoff games where, you know, some of these other coaches, I know he's been compared to like Marvin Lewis. Lewis didn't. And he keeps winning playoff games. You can argue, though, that it's to Josh Allen's credit, and I really won't fight you on it, but that is something that owners look at, and it is something that he gets done where other coaches with great quarterbacks haven't been able to do or even make the playoffs. I mean, look at Peyton Manning's, much of his beginning of his career. He went through, I think, 3 coaches because that was a team that was very up and down in terms of their overall success. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Mike on the line. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
Good, thank you. I guess we have to talk about Cousins, which is probably the play of the game and why the Sabres lost. I mean, he's messing around with the puck right there, right inside of the blue line right there. It gets dripped from him, and then they turn around and have a 2-on-1 and go down and score. And he just cannot be your second-line center. They have to find a solution, and that brings me to my second point. Is management. When does ownership in this town finally have to, you know, when does, you know, somebody have to speak up and say, hey, maybe it's Pegula, and them not willing to spend the money? I just, you know, from what I understand, they had cap room, a bunch of cap room this year, and that brings me back to, what was it, 2 years ago at the free agent deadline when they know they needed a goalie and they didn't go out and try and get anybody. And I guess sooner or later management has to take responsibility for the reason this team is the way they are right now. They didn't replace, I guess, the guy that went to Edmonton, I forget his name, from last year. They ate his contract, I guess. They didn't have a replacement for him.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. In terms of management, I do want to say this real quick. I am of the belief, and I could be very wrong, no one wants to come here. You are historically one of the worst franchises in professional hockey. And a lot of players have come here that are star players that have some of their worst seasons. Taylor Hall is the guy that immediately comes to mind for me. Yeah. I think you have got to build up goodwill back with the NHL as a whole. Stop hiring rookie head coaches. To be fair, if this goes poorly with Adams and he is shown the door, stop hiring rookie GMs. You've got to get some credibility back. I do think that was a major factor in bringing Lindy back, both credibility with the fan base and the NHL. You kind of do need to win with this group. But on Dylan Cousins' point,
yeah. I have a jarring stat for you here, Zach.
Good. You're going to kill me with one of my favorite players from a few years ago.
I know.
This one is like hurts.
So the Sabres have a few very clear shooters on their team, right? The leader in shots on goal throughout the entire Sabres roster right now is Dylan Cousins with 19 shots on net. And he has no goals and not even an assist. Not even a...
Nope.
He shoots it, it bounces off somebody, and somebody finishes it, and he kind of gets credit for an assist on that. No, nothing. He has 19 shots on net and nothing to show for
it. His only noticeable stat is he is -5.
Yeah, and that is noticeable.
His confidence is shot Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no confidence.
He also
he doesn't hit. He's not as aggressive. That was a big reason why, like, I fell in love with him as a player. I made the joke when we were first getting on air, you know, some years ago. He was a guy that would fight a polar bear to defend his teammate. Mm-hmm. I remember not the Winter Classic, but when they were up in Canada against
the Heritage game
up in Toronto. He's sitting next to Terry Pegula, slamming on the glass
because he got kicked out
with 2 minutes left. I mean, losing his mind. And I'm like, that's my guy. He's 20 years old, and he's a crazy person, and he's big, and he's got that scoring touch. He was a playmaker. It felt like 2 years ago, it felt like he is going to be the perfect second center because, like you brought up, like he may not be the Tage Thompson that's going to maybe score 100 points, but if he's going to be a 50 to 60-point guy, 25-goal scorer, and just a grinded-out dude, a pain in the you-know-what to play against, beautiful. That is all gone. None of it is there. He can't shoot. He's missing that, I think, more than anybody. Every scoring chance
that's the one thing
like
it doesn't show me. It shows me shots, but it is shots on goal, so I would assume
and the stats will not prove this. I'm 100%, but I don't care. He hits the post more than anybody else on the Sabres too.
Yeah,
I mean, his confidence is shot in every aspect of his game, and it is hard to watch. And now yesterday you saw, I mean, you've seen it for most of this year, the turnovers. I mean, the actively just ending plays. I mean, 2 years ago, the kid line was one of the most dangerous lines in hockey, mm-hmm. not just for the Sabres. Him, Jack Quinn, and J.J. Paterka looked amazing. Right now, through 5 games of this year, I get it, it's early. Paterka looks like the only one that has even somewhat ascended.
Oh,
he is ascended.
He's but great. Quinn looks, J.J. Paterka is probably their best forward.
I think he's their best forward by a mile.
Yeah.
I think he offers more than anybody else.
He has that shot that has kind of come out of nowhere, but of the two, of Quinn and Paterka, you expected Quinn to have the better shot.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen anything from Quinn, but at the same time, he's on a line with Cousins, so how much of that is due to the fact that Cousins can't provide any offense?
I also wonder, though, his skating is rough.
Yeah.
Chandy Dominguez has brought it up yesterday, but like his skating is not good.
Mm. And that's tough to see.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, two ankle injuries back-to-back like the way he had them.
And you do wonder.
Yeah.
You do wonder.
Right.
Let's hit one more phone call before our first time out. DJ, on the line. DJ, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. Good. Thank you so much for bringing up the missed shots. I feel like a crazy person watching these games with Dylan Cousins.
That's how I feel.
And frickin' Tage Thompson missing by a mile. We lose so much offensive possession because they miss the net and it goes flying around the boards and out of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
We get no garbage goals because they never hit the net. Like, just hit the goalie. It would be better because you at least get a shot at a rebound. It's just the most frustrating thing in the world how these guys, it feels like the last year and a half, have just missed the net by a mile. And then two, on Dylan Cousins, I mean, we've already given him the contract. It's 7 years, a long contract. If moving him out of center, you know, into a wing doesn't work, I mean, are we just eating that? Like, is there no way to get out of that or trade? Or, I mean, dump him for anything?
I mean, I don't know if you could trade it. I don't think any team would really want to take that on, given what they've seen from him recently. I mean, I don't know any team that would want that contract.
I think that's
that
the big problem.
Player.
Yeah.
Obviously, if he starts turning around, you're not going to talk about trading him. But if he starts turning around, people might take interest. But you know, at this point, no team in the NHL will want that contract or that player. Like, as he's performing, it's not going where it needs to go with him. And I hope it turns around because, like you were saying, he was one of the most fun players to watch in terms of he's physical and he's got offense. And you know what? That's something the Sabres haven't had in a while, and it's great to see. But, you know, maybe moving him to wing will help. But
we're going to find out.
I don't know if they're going to do that.
I think they're going to have to. 803-0550, the number to call. You want to get your thoughts in on the Sabres. Of course, we'll love to listen to that. We're going to transition, though, to football here coming up next as Sal Capaccio joins the show. Big day, very busy day over at One Bills Drive yesterday. We'll get his thoughts on everything that went down after this quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Zucker plays it back to the point. Byram feeds a short pass from McLeod, top of the near circle. Shot scores! Welcome to Buffalo, Ryan McLeod. He's given the Sabres a 5-4 lead with 9:04 to go here in the third period. The Sabres have come roaring back in Pittsburgh.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. Ryan McLeod, one of my favorite additions the Sabres have made this offseason. He's been fantastic. Scores his first goal last night. And as you heard there, put him up 5-4. Two very quick goals. Paterka with a beauty. And then McLeod there, slap shot nearly from the point. Fun game last night at times, but man, it became very, very frustrating as well. We do have some Bills breaking news, and we're going to bring in our own Sal Capaccio here on the Wester Hotline to help us break it down. But Sal, the Bills have brought in a kicker.
Yeah, they have, guys. We're just learning this a couple minutes ago, as you said. Let me kind of go over the details here. The Bills have signed kicker Lucas Havrisik to the practice squad. They've released wide receiver Amarian Brown, and Havrisik is a player that's been in the league a little bit here. I'm just trying to get the information on him. You guys might have it more in front of you than I actually have because this is just coming in as I'm kind of getting all situated to talk to you. So here we go. Lucas Havrisik, he's with the Rams. I don't really know too much about him. Originally entered the NFL to the Colts practice squad in 2022, spent time with the Browns and the Rams over the last couple of seasons.
You could probably argue that it's maybe good we don't know a ton about a kicker.
Right.
Because the more you know, it probably gets a little bit uglier.
Yeah, you know, that's probably right. I mean, he did appear in 9 games for the Rams in 2023 after being signed off the Browns practice squad in October. All right, so obviously this is a Tyler Bass situation, right? That's what is happening here. Lucas Havrisik, you know, joins the Bills, and we all knew that over the last few weeks, you know, Tyler Bass, even though their firm commitment to him and saying, you know, how much they believe in him, that things had been really inconsistent and have been trending towards them taking a look around. Well, yesterday they brought some kickers in for a workout. Brandon Bean confirmed that that was the case. Obviously, Havrisik would be, you know, somebody that they had taken a look at either yesterday or recently. And Brandon Bean yesterday had some very, I think, truthful words about Tyler Bass and his situation. And he said that they had spoken to Tyler Bass about the fact that they were going to be doing this and that, you know, it just hasn't been good enough, the production. And obviously they signed him to an extension and there's, you know, money that you have to think about here and what that situation is. But as I've said all along, I wouldn't expect the Bills just to outright sign a guy and cut Tyler Bass. If there's a guy out there that's not on a team, there's a reason he's not on a team. And are you just coming in and trusting him to make kicks more than Tyler Bass? I mean, I guess you could say you trust anybody, but I don't think that's the case. So to me, this was always the move and what I'd been saying, which is you bring someone in on the practice squad, you get them up to speed on what your operation is, and then maybe you last another week here at home with Tyler Bass, see if he can figure things out with someone pushing him. We'll see where it goes from here, though, guys.
Is this going to be a thing, Sal, do you think that, like, because as you brought up with the contract, too, that even if, let's say, you know, Havrisik becomes the guy, that they ultimately have two kickers on the team and Bass is just effectively benched because they can't really cut him with the contract? Or could they actually kind of work their way out of that if ultimately Havrisik does become the starting kicker?
I mean, you never say never. I mean, you can do it. It just would be a lot of dead money. I mean, you could do it. It's not like you have to pay extra on the contract. It's just that you're then have a kicker that counts money on the salary cap that you've given him guaranteed money that now you have to account for. And it's a dead salary cap. What you also can do is elevate him. If you remember, you get two elevations. And honestly, the Bills are trending towards being healthier this week, right? Which is, maybe then that leaves space for, okay, we're going to elevate this guy because, but then what happens? Are you elevating him to actually kick the ball? And if that's the case, that's really interesting. Yes, you could have two kickers. It's not ideal. I don't think the Bills want to have two kickers. That's why this guy's in the practice squad right now, and then, you know, we'll see where it goes.
And then you did bring up Brandon Bean spoke yesterday. It was a very busy day at One Bills Drive. Also heard from Amari Cooper, just kind of to, blanket question. But what was your really big takeaway from yesterday? We heard from McDermott, Bean, Cooper, Josh Allen also spoke. We got our first injury report from yesterday, although it was a walkthrough. Very busy day yesterday.
Yeah, let's start with Sean McDermott. Sean was very focused on making sure that there wasn't too high of expectations for Amari coming in right away. He even said he wasn't sure if he's going to play this week. I think that was just kind of tempering a lot of things. He kept saying, it's about the team, not about one player. I think he just wanted to kind of, make sure that that's how he sent his messaging. Then we heard from Brandon Bean. He was very committed to still saying how much he believes in this wide receiver group. It wasn't about them. It was about adding a player of this caliber. But we all have seen the lack of production from the wide receivers, the lack of separation from the wide receivers, and that manifesting itself to everything being a little bit more of a struggle lately for the offense, obviously. Bean also gave a lot of insight into how the deal went down, what the timing was. He said Devontae Adams' trade did not just speed them up and pivot to Amari Cooper, but it kind of closed the door on it, which then they went all in with their chips on Amari Cooper when they'd already been there. He said that really, as of Sunday night into Monday, and then Monday afternoon specifically, they were in a good spot where they felt this was going to happen. Now, do the math on that. Sunday, the Browns lost to the Eagles to drop to 5-1, right? So you think about the Browns from their standpoint. It's not a surprise that they probably looked at themselves and said, okay, we're 1-5. I'm sorry, 1-5, not 5-1. They look at themselves and go, we're 5-1. I did it again. We're 1-5. And, this season we have to start evaluating what we are now versus what we have and what we are in the future. So I think it made it much easier for them to trade this player who maybe they didn't want to trade before that, right? You can't force someone to trade you a player just because it looks like, he'd be a good fit for you. And then financially, obviously, it made a lot of sense for the Bills to grab a player like this, where you're only paying him $800,000 for the rest of the year, not only cash, but on your salary cap, versus someone like Devontae Adams, where Bean basically gave an indication they were monitoring that, they were watching that, but it became clear that wasn't going to happen from the Bills' standpoint, so that's why they, went to Amari Cooper. And then from Cooper's standpoint, he drove to Buffalo after he heard the news, or he was told. It was a 3-hour or so drive, give or take. He said it was basically like the first day of school, a long drive before the first day of school, a lot to think about. And he believes that he can contribute this week. He said it's uncharted territory for him to have to go to a new team and in 5 days go out there and play. But he thinks he can learn enough of the playbook because he's a smart guy to be able to go out there and contribute.
So, Sal, it's kind of interesting. Like you were saying, Bean said that the Adams trade didn't really speed anything up. So I'm sitting here kind of wondering, did they have both of these trades kind of like at like an even pace of in sort of like this, all right, we're talking to both, let's try to get both to the finish line here and see which one goes first? Because like this is the second trade deadline in a row where we've heard them talking to two different teams about the same kind of player. Last year it was eventually they get Rasul Douglas, but we heard talks of going for Jalen Johnson in Chicago. And it's like, I just think that's kind of interesting to look into the.
Well, we don't know, Josh. We don't know the level of talks they actually had with the Raiders.
Right, but it's at the same time, it is kind of like, it's interesting to just hear that didn't really impact anything that much. And I'm curious if, if Cooper was the idea all along, or if it was, just kind of an even thing and just see where things were at. I understand where you're coming from. Like, we don't know where they were at in terms of the level, but at the same time, I'm glad to see that it didn't really impact what was actually happening. I was worried that, the Cooper thing was like, oh, panic button, the Adams is gone, and now we got to get somebody. I'm glad to see it was maybe sort of the plan all along. We don't know for sure, but it could have been.
I'd be confident in saying that I don't think that they were counting on a trade for Devontae Adams. You know what I mean? This wasn't, oh my God, what are we going to do now? Again, I don't think that they went so far down with the Raiders. He said they were monitoring that situation. It doesn't even mean they had a trade in place, a framework, or anything like that. It was probably had some conversations, see where it's going. But look, I think the reporting on the Devontae Adams situation for a while has been that they weren't gonna eat the money. So I think the Bills, once you know that, that, you know, you're kind of out of it. But, you know, you see where it goes. Maybe at some point the Raiders say, okay, well, we want to make a deal here with somebody. What do you want to do? So, no, I don't get the sense. I think they knew for a while that Cooper was very much in their sights. I think they, you know, had been monitoring that. I think you go back a while. Brandon Bean said it's his pro personnel staff's job to kind of see all these things and to, you know, talk about players as the whole season's going on. It's also, it's funny he said the trade deadline. It's not the trade deadline yet. There's still 3 weeks before that, guys.
It's weird because, like, it feels like that is because those two big trades and then all of a sudden it's like, it's quiet.
Well, I say that because Brandon Bean made it clear that, like, they might not be done. If there's something out there that fits for them, they'll go and, you know, make that deal. But it's got to fit financially. It's got to be the right fit for the player. And, you know, getting Amari Cooper in now before the trade deadline allows him a few extra weeks as opposed to Rasul Douglas last year coming in November. Now it's a few extra weeks to learn the playbook and get up to speed. But, you know, just going back to your original question, I don't think there's anything that suggests that, oh, my God, we're so invested in Davante Adams and now we have to go to Amari Cooper. This was a guy that they had been talking about. They had been in contact with Cleveland. They were monitoring the Raiders situation. And sure, you never know. But you have to, Josh, keep it open. Like, what if the Raiders just call him one day and go, yeah, Davante doesn't want to play with Aaron Rodgers. We're going to eat a lot of money. So you have to keep that open.
Right.
Sal, last thing here, just real quick on the injury report. Again, was a walkthrough yesterday, but notable that Kincaid actually popped up yesterday, limited with a collarbone injury. Did you see anything on Monday night that necessarily would kind of point to, like, all right, that's where it was? I think I remember Kincaid kind of getting up a little bit weird, but I can't remember for sure.
I did. I remember there was a play. It would have been on the far sideline, the Jets sideline. It was going left to right if you were watching on television. I remember him catching a ball, going down, and when he got up, I thought for a minute he kind of, like, looked and maybe grabbed his shoulder. Not grabbed it, but kind of, like, put his hand on it, right? Like, and it was shoulder area. So that made sense. I watched him. He came off the field. He never went to the trainers, never went into the medical tent, but I did notice it. So, hey, look, Sean McDermott said when we talked to him on Tuesday, we asked him about any injuries in the game, and he said nothing significant, minor bumps and bruises along the way. So I'm going to just take it at that for right now, and the fact that he was limited, the fact that he finished the game, the fact that there was no official injury report on him to kind of think maybe this week, maybe he's in a red non-contact jersey today. We'll find out here, guys. They do practice at 12:30 today, so maybe he's in a red non-contact. But otherwise, honestly, they're getting healthier. I mean, look at the injury report. There's a lot of names. But not anybody who's DNP of a walkthrough yesterday. Let's, you know, get that, you know, out of the way because it was obviously it's not a normal practice. This week might not be a good week for the, oh my God, they're so injured, fire the entire training staff crowd. Because this is what happens in an NFL season. You have weeks where you're more injured. You have weeks where you're less injured. It's professional football. It looks like they're getting healthier.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Sal, enjoy practice. We'll talk again later.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. I'm going to take a quick time out here, but coming up at 11 o'clock, we're going to get more of a look at what exactly the Bills are getting in Amari Cooper and what the Cleveland Browns are really up to, as we're going to hear from Spencer German of 92.3, the Fan over in Cleveland. That's coming up at 11 o'clock. We're still, of course, taking calls, 803-0550, the number to call. Talking a lot of Sabres there in that first segment. Had a lot of fun doing that. A lot of stuff to get off of our chests. Love to bring that back up as well. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
They still have their reset. Into Fiebisch. 8 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter of game three. 4 seconds. Ionescu will heave. And hit! Sabrina Ionescu with the biggest shot in Liberty history.
A lot of fun last night in the WNBA. Didn't get to see any of the game, obviously, we watched the Sabres game, but saw the ending. Iconic shots left and right. That's the thing about basketball I do love, those iconic shots to end games.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a lot of fun. Got coming up next here, we got Spencer German of 92.3 The Fan. Get a little bit more of an idea on Amari Cooper. Should be a lot of fun. I mean, Cleveland, though, I can't imagine covering that team has been a blast. We'll see what he has to say coming up after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We'll be right back.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.